Welcome back to another episode of Michigan Hidden History. Today we are back in Jackson and talking about the abolitionist movement in the city, and about the Kansas and Nebraska Act, and about the history of slavery in the United States, just very briefly. So before we start, make sure to rate and review on Apple and rate the show on Spotify and follow me on Instagram. So let's learn some history. So during the 1830s and 1850s in Jackson, a strong anti-slavery presence grew. These anti-slavery people were known as abolitionists, and these people advocated with prominent speakers and public meetings. The abolitionist movement has been growing since slavery was first introduced in the United States or the 13 colonies, but it grew and grew and grew until it became a big prominent thing, and people were like advocating, speaking, having meetings about it, lobbying Congress about it. But the courthouse, which was in the southwest corner of Michigan Avenue and Jackson Street, was the favorite place to meet and to have meetings and speakers. In 1839, Seymour Treadwell, someone who we will be talking about in the next episode, there will be a special episode just on him because he comes up so many times when I was doing reading about the abolitionists of Jackson, but we won't be talking about him a lot right now. That's why there's an episode on him. But for right now, all you need to know is that he was an Underground Railroad conductor and abolitionist and an author. So, self-emancipated abolitionist Henry Bibb visited Jackson, Michigan in 1850. He was a speaker at the courthouse and he was talking about human rights. And this was 3 months before the Kansas-Nebraska Act was passed. And a group of abolitionists met at a courthouse and to talk about proposing an act that formally declared the state of Michigan opposed to slavery. Now, what is the Kansas and Nebraska Act? There's a lot of background, a lot of backstory, a lot of things with slavery and stuff like that that I would need to cover before we talk about the Kansas and Nebraska Act. So we're gonna deep dive into that really quickly. So before we get on to what the rest of the abolitionist movement here in Jackson looks like. So we're going to start off with the Northwest Ordinance of 1789 and work our way forward through history until we get to the Kansas and Nebraska Act. So the Northwest Ordinance was a land ordinance, and it was created in 1789, and it established the westward expansion and the formation of new states. The new states are as followed in order of their when they were admitted into the Union. So they are Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and part of Minnesota. So basically almost all the northern part of the Midwest. At this time, there were so many questions on whether or not these states were going to be admitted as free states to the Union or slave states to the Union. So Congress decided to extend an imaginary line called the Mason-Dixon line, which separated free states and slave states. So this line was extended to the southern borders of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. So anything north of the Mason-Dixon line were all free states, and all the ones below the Mason-Dixon line were all slave states. So that's how it was for a while. To be admitted as state, the state had to get to a population of 60,000 people. That was a must. That was written into the Northwest Ordinance of 1789. The first state to be admitted was Ohio, and this was the first free state to be admitted to the Union. And before, as you may have guessed, there were lots of slave states that were admitted before Ohio was admitted to the Union. And the balance of Congress between free states and slave states were closely monitored by everyone in Congress and in the United States. And there had to be a right balance or else there would be a war, which would start because of the imbalance in Congress and how bills were passed and how everything was laid out. So between the time Ohio was admitted and what happens in the 1817, the balance was at 11 states each, and Missouri wanted to come in as a slave state, which would tip the balance in favor of the Senate. So northern states were not happy about that, as you can imagine. So there was a lot of debate and tension, and Congress finally passed the Missouri Compromise, which admitted Missouri as a slave state and Maine as a free state. It also extended the Mason-Dixon line, and it says anything above the 36 degree latitude was a free state, and anything below was a slave state in the Louisiana Territory. So the Missouri Compromise was passed and signed in 1820, so it seems very simple to follow, but not everything in government is that easy or that straightforward, or anything is never that way. So we go 34 years into the future to 1854. And this is when Stephen Douglas, a senator from Illinois, wants to introduce new legislation to build a transcontinental railroad that spans from maybe Boston to California, Massachusetts to California, East Coast to West Coast transportation. Now, if you know, at this time, railroads were the big transportation thing. So first it was horse-drawn carriages, and then it was steamboats, and then it was railroads, and then it was cars, and then planes, and then now we're making electric cars, trying to make the stuff that we have more efficient. So far, there hasn't been any, like, significant new inventions in transportation that would, like, be, like, significant. Like, the car was cars replace horse-drawn carriages. We're not there yet in our time. So, I'm going to read directly from my source, which is history.nebraska.gov. So it is a really reliable site. So I'm going to read directly from there. And this is what it was meant to do, the Kansas-Nebraska Act. It was signed into law on May 30th, 1854 by President Franklin Pierce. This was closely related to national and sectional politics in the 1850s. The incentive for the organization of these territories came from the need for transcontinental railroad. Northerners wanted the railroad to follow a northern route. Southerners wanted to follow a southern route. So there you go. You already have a sectional difference in the way that northern and southern people wanted the railroad being built. So there's this valley that covers over thousands of covered wagon immigrants that have traveled to the far west and was excellent roadbed, but no one was interested in building railroad through an unorganized Indian country. So in order to do this, they had to organize the territory. And to help make this territory come true was Senator Stephen Douglas. This is the same Stephen Douglas that was the one who debated Abraham Lincoln in the future, the one that helped him help Abraham Lincoln springboard his political career. He repeatedly introduced bills to Congress that provided organization of the Nebraska Territory. In doing so, he ran the Southern ambitions to build the railroad west from the cities in the South were not really good. And no one believed that there would be more than one transcontinental railroad. People always thought that there were going to be many transcontinental railroads. So there will be one from the North, like one from the South. There were going to be two. But he ran into the complications of regarding the extension of slavery. So by the terms of the Missouri Compromise, as I said before, slavery was prohibited in the area where Nebraska would be formed. So Southern politicians were cool about the organization of Nebraska for railroad purposes, but were not cool with admitting another free state to the Union, because it the South was already in a bad position to have votes in the Senate, in the House, and all those things. So in Douglas's enthusiasm for Nebraska, he agreed to create two territories instead of one, and this would be the Kansas and Nebraska Act. So Nebraska would be North and Kansas would be South. Now, how would they decide whether or not they would be either free states or slave states? Well, according to the Missouri Compromise, they would both be free states. So in a compromise to make the decision, he also agreed on the doctrine of popular sovereignty, in which citizens of each territory would decide for themselves whether they would tolerate slavery or not. So many Northerners were highly critical of this concession to the institution of slavery, because they probably knew that majority of the people in Kansas and Nebraska supported slavery. Because most of the people immigrating to Kansas and Nebraska at this time came from the South, and they immigrated west. So the Northerners didn't like this. And they had anti-Nebraska meetings that took place all over the North, particularly in the states of the Old Northwest. So this would be the Northwest Territory. So also from these meetings, the Republican Party would develop. And this is where another podcast will be formed, because there will be more on that. So this controversy played out and they decided to vote. So I forgot what happened. So it looks like Kansas was officially a free state, but there was lots of violence that did not end. And it was one of the main reasons that the Civil War was Nebraska a free state or a slave state. I want to make sure, because I want to give you the accurate information. So Nebraska would also be a free state. So there were two free states now in the Union. So that caused a very big imbalance in the territories. and in the acts of the eyes of the South. So that's why the Civil War started. As I said before, this could cause a war because of the tensions that are leading up to the Kansas and Nebraska, before and after the Kansas and Nebraska Act. So, brief history. I hope you enjoyed that brief history on the Kansas history leading up to the Kansas and Nebraska Act. So we're going to get back to the abolitionists in Michigan, in Jackson, Michigan. So in the years leading up to the Civil War, there were a lot of newspapers in Jackson that supported the anti-slavery cause. Three of the papers were printed near the location of Buckley Harris Park. The park was once the corner of the town's public square. The Jacksonburg Centennial was the first Jackson newspaper, and it originated in 1837. The paper was founded by William DeLand and Norman Allen. These two assisted fugitives on the Underground Railroad. The American Freeman was founded by another Underground Railroad participant, William Sullivan, and his brother in the late 1830s, and it was the first paper that talked about the abolitionist ideas in Michigan. And in 1850s, the American Citizen, the editor was Charles DeLand, who was also an Underground Railroad member, and said no more slavery compromises. So no more Missouri compromises, no more Kansas-Nebraska acts. He's probably just tired of all this stuff, and so he probably just wants to get it done and over with. So he gets his wish like 10 years later in 1865. 15 years later, I don't know when he made the paper, but he gets his wish 15 years later. But then another issue arises, Jim Crow laws, which I'm not going to get into because it is going to be like a long podcast then, and it'll be very off topic. So, yeah. So... hope you enjoyed this this episode on abolitionists in Jackson. You can listen to this wherever you find podcasts. Don't forget to rate and review on Apple and rate on Spotify. And don't forget to hit that follow button on Instagram at MI Hidden History. And this week's quote is, stop hating yourself for everything, and you aren't start loving yourself for everything you already are. Thank you for listening. See you next week, and let's make Michigan history great.